Hello, this is Steven Van Dyke, and the show is Customer Care. I will be reading from Joan Didion, Los Angeles Notebook. There is something uneasy in the Los Angeles air this afternoon, some unnatural stillness, some tension. What it means is that tonight a Santa Ana will begin to blow, a hot wind from the northeast winding down through the Cajon and San Gorgonio passes, blowing up sandstorms out along Route 66, drying the hills and the nerves to the flashpoint. For a few days now, we will see smoke back in the canyons and hear sirens in the night. I have neither heard nor read that a Santa Ana is due, but I know it, and almost everyone I have seen today knows it too. We know it because we feel it. The baby frets, the maid sulks. I rekindle a waning argument with the telephone company, then cut my losses and lie down, given over to whatever it is in the air. To live with the Santa Ana is to accept, consciously or unconsciously, a deeply mechanistic view of human behavior. I recall being told when I first moved to Los Angeles and was living on an isolated beach that the Indians would throw themselves into the sea when the bad wind blew. I could see why. The Pacific turned ominously glossy during a Santa Ana period, and one woke in the night troubled not only by the peacocks screaming in the olive trees, but by the eerie absence of surf. The heat was surreal. The sky had a yellow cast, the kind of light sometimes called earthquake weather. My only neighbor would not come out of her house for days, and there were no lights at night, and her husband roamed the place with a machete. One day he would tell me that he had heard a trespasser, the next a rattlesnake. On nights like that, Raymond Chandler once wrote about the Santa Ana, every booze party ends in a fight. Meek little wives feel the edge of the carving knife and study their husbands' necks. Anything can happen. That was the kind of wind it was. I did not know then that there was any basis for the effect it had on all of us, but it turns out to be another of those cases in which science bears out folk wisdom. The Santa Ana, which is named for one of the canyons it rushes through, is a fern wind, like the fern of Austria and Switzerland, and the Hamsun of Israel. There are a number of persistent malevolent winds, perhaps the best known of which are the Mistral of France and the Mediterranean Sirocco, but a fern wind has distinct characteristics. It occurs on the leeward slope of a mountain range, and although the air begins as a cold mass, it is warmed as it comes down the mountain and appears, finally, as a hot, dry wind. Whenever and wherever a fern blows, doctors hear about headaches and nausea and allergies, about nervousness, about depression. In Los Angeles, some teachers do not accept attempt to conduct formal classes during a Santa Ana because the children become unmanageable. In Switzerland, the suicide rate goes up during the Fern, and in the courts of some Swiss cantons, the wind is considered a mitigating circumstance for a crime. Surgeons are said to watch the wind, because blood does not clot normally during a Fern. A few years ago, an Israeli physicist discovered that not only during such winds, but for the 10 or 12 hours which precede them, the air carries an unusually high ratio of positive to negative ions. No one seems to know exactly why that should be. Some talk about friction, and others suggest solar disturbances. In any case, the positive ions are there, and what an excess of positive ions does, in the simplest terms, is make people unhappy. One cannot get much more mechanistic than that. Easterners commonly complain that there is no weather at all in Southern California, that the days and the seasons slip by relentlessly, numbingly bland. That is quite misleading. In fact, the climate is characterized by infrequent but violent extremes. Two periods of torrential subtropical rains, which continue for weeks and wash out the hills and send subdivisions sliding toward the seas, about 20 scattered days a year of the Santa Ana, which with its incendiary dryness invariably means fire. At the first prediction of a Santa Ana, the Forest Service flies men and equipment from Northern California into the southern forests, and the Los Angeles Fire Department cancels its ordinary non-firefighting routines. The Santa Ana caused Malibu to burn the way it did in 1956, and Bel Air in 1961, and Santa Barbara in 1964. In the winter of 1966-67, 11 men were killed fighting a Santa Ana fire that spread through the San Gabriel Mountains. Just to watch the front page news out of Los Angeles during a Santa Ana is to get very close to what it is about the place. The longest single Santa Ana period in recent years was in 1957, and it lasted not the usual 3 or 4 days, but 14 days, from November 21 until December 4. On the first day, 25,000 acres of the San Gabriel Mountains were burning, with gusts reaching 100 miles an hour. In town, the wind reached force 12, or hurricane force, on the Beaufort scale. Oil derricks were toppled, and people ordered off the downtown streets to avoid injury from flying objects. On November 22, the fire in the San Gabriels was out of control. On November 24, 6 people were killed in automobile accidents. And by the end of the week, the Los Angeles Times was keeping a box score of traffic deaths. On November 26, a prominent Pasadena attorney, depressed about money, shot and killed his wife, their 2 sons, and himself. On November 27, a Southgate divorcee, 22, was murdered and thrown from a moving car. On November 30th, the San Gabriel fire was still out of control, and the wind in town was blowing 80 miles an hour. On the first day of December, four people died violently, and on the third, the wind began to break. It is hard for people who have not lived in Los Angeles to realize how radically the Santa Ana figures in the local imagination. The city burning is Los Angeles's deepest image of itself. Nathaniel West perceived that in The Day of the Locust, and at the time of the 1965 Watts riots, what struck the imagination most indelibly were the fires. For days, one could drive the Harbor Freeway and see the city on fire, just as we had always known it would be in the end. Los Angeles weather is the weather of catastrophe, of apocalypse, and just as the reliably long and bitter winters of New England determine the way life is lived there, so the violence and the unpredictability of the Santa Ana affect the entire quality of life in Los Angeles, accentuate its impermanence, its unreliability. The wind shows us how close to the edge we are. "Here's why I'm on the beeper, Ron," said the telephone voice on the all-night radio show. "I just want to say that this sex for the secretary creature, whatever her name is, certainly isn't contributing anything to the morals in this country. It's pathetic, statistics show. It's sex and the office, honey," the disc jockey said. "That's the title, by Helen Gurley Brown. Statistics show what? I haven't got them right here at my fingertips, naturally, but they show. I'd be interested in hearing them. Be constructive, you night owls." "All right, let's take one statistic," the voice said, truculent now. "Maybe I haven't read the book, but what's this business she recommends about going out with married men for lunch?" So it went from midnight until 5 a.m., interrupted by records and by occasional calls debating whether or not a rattlesnake can swim. Misinformation about rattlesnakes is a leitmotif of the insomniac imagination in Los Angeles. Toward 2 a.m., a man from out Tarzana Way called to protest. The night owls who called earlier must have been thinking about The Man in the Gray Flannel Suit or some other book, he said, because Helen's one of the few authors trying to tell us what's really going on. Hefner's another, and he's also controversial, working in another area. An old man, after testifying that he personally had seen a swimming rattlesnake in the Delta Mendota Canal, urged moderation on the Helen Gurley Brown question. We shouldn't get on the beeper to call things pornographic before we've read them, he complained, pronouncing it porniographic. I say, get the book, give it a chance. The original provocateur called back to agree that she would get the book, and then I'll burn it, she added. Book burner, eh? Laughed the disc jockey good-naturedly. I wish they still burned witches, she hissed. It is 3 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon, and 105 degrees, and the air so thick with smog that the dusty palm trees loom up with a sudden and rather attractive mystery. I have been playing in the sprinklers with the baby, and I get in the car and go to Ralph's Market on the corner of Sunset and Fuller, wearing an old bikini bathing suit. That is not a very good thing to wear to the market, but neither is it at Ralph's on the corner of Sunset and Fuller, an unusual costume. Nonetheless, a large woman in a cotton muumuu jams her cart into mine at the butcher counter. What a thing to wear to the market, she says in a loud but strangled voice. Everyone looks the other way, and I study a plastic package of rib lamb chops, and she repeats it. She follows me all over the store, to the junior foods, to the dairy products, to the Mexican delicacies, jamming my cart whenever she can. Her husband plucks at her sleeve. As I leave the checkout counter, she raises her voice one last time. What a thing to wear to Ralph's, she says. A party at someone's house in Beverly Hills, a pink tent, two orchestras, a couple of French communist directors in Cardin evening jackets, chili and hamburgers from Chasen's. The wife, an English actor, sits at a table alone. She visits California rarely, although her husband works here a good deal. An American who knows her slightly comes over to the table. Marvelous to see you here, he says. Is it? She says. How long have you been here? Too long. She takes a fresh drink from a passing waiter and smiles at her husband, who is dancing. The American tries again. He mentions her husband. I hear he's marvelous in this picture. She looks at the American for the first time. When she finally speaks, she enunciates every word very clearly. He is also a fag, she says pleasantly. The oral history of Los Angeles is written in piano bars. Moon River, the piano player always plays, and Mountain Greenery. There's a small hotel, and this is not the first time. People talk to each other, tell each other about their first wives and last husbands. Stay funny, they tell each other, and this is to die over. A construction man talks to an unemployed screenwriter who is celebrating alone his 10th wedding anniversary. The construction man is on a job in Montecito. Up in Montecito, he says, they got 1 square mile with 135 millionaires. Putrescence, the writer says. That's all you got to say about it? Don't read me wrong. I think Santa Barbara is one of the most, Christ, the most beautiful places in the world, but it's a beautiful place that contains a putrescence. They just live on their putrescent millions. So give me putrescent. No, no, the writer says. I just happen to think millionaires have some sort of lacking in their elasticity. A drunk requests the Sweetheart of Sigma Chi. The piano player says he doesn't know it. Where do you learn to play the piano? The drunk asks. I got 2 degrees, the piano player says, one in musical education. I go to a coin telephone and call a friend in New York. Where are you? He says. In a piano bar in Encino, I say. Why? He says. Why not? I say.